Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Patrick Brennan of National Review is in for the vacationing Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Patrick, we start with the good. And this is, in part, actual good martini, and in part, an homage to Jim, who would definitely make this the good martini anyway if he were here today, because he's a huge fan of Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, who today will become, yes, the 13th official Republican in the 2016 presidential field. And that doesn't even count a couple who have yet to make the plunge official. So we knew this was going to happen. We know he's way back in the field at this point and is probably going to be clawing and scratching just to get on the debate stage, Patrick. But if you look at the Jindal record and his ability to react fairly quickly to breaking news events, this could be a candidacy worth watching.
Yeah, I agree. He's coming from a very, very low point. Apparently, he's polling worse than none of the above, which is unfortunate. Jim did a profile of him in 2011 for NR, talking about his really incredibly impressive governing record in Louisiana. It's been a little less good since then. He's had some legislative defeats, but this is a guy who brings all kinds of things to the table in terms of talents and an inspiring immigrant background story and everything. So I hope he'll get somewhere.
What do you think is the key to breaking through this field that is just getting more and more crowded by the day? Is it something he's got to say? Is it finding money to get some ads up before those final polls are taken, before the debates start? What's his strategy here to break through?
What isn't the key is some of what he's been doing so far, which is trying to have the most dramatic, the most far punchy conservative reaction to every single thing. When Rudy Giuliani said the thing about how he doesn't think Obama loves America or whatever, Jindal came out and said people are attacking Rudy Giuliani. I agree with Rudy. I mean, so that is not the way to do it. The way to do it is to give interesting, meaningful speeches. The guy has a lot of policy plans already out there. He's a very policy-oriented guy. So put that stuff out there and offer people smart stuff. That's what they'll want. And so people, I don't think, react well to these kind of edgy statements. And so I don't think he's quite figured it out so far, but I hope he will.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And it's actually a follow-up to our good martini yesterday. Yesterday, Ian Tuttle and I generally praised Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, for her pretty deft handling of the Confederate flag issue in South Carolina. She's talked about the need to respect the heritage of the state and the history of the Confederacy in that part of the country. But at the same time, she says we need to focus on the future and it's time for the flag to come down from the state grounds. And South Carolina, that's obviously a divisive issue in that state and probably in that part of the country. And what Ian was a little bit concerned about yesterday already seems to be coming to pass less than 24 hours later, because it's not just the flag on the state grounds of the Capitol in South Carolina anymore. There's also now a push to remove any vestige of this image, not from personal property necessarily, but from the public square. You've got Walmart, you've got Amazon saying they're not going to sell anything with the flag on it anymore. Warner Brothers is saying they're going to remove the flag from any Dukes of Hazzard merchandise, which is pretty much going to scrub most of their line, I would think. And and now you've got Mitch McConnell, who was asked yesterday about statues of Confederate figures in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda, and unsolicited, he had this to say about one that's in the Kentucky Capitol Rotunda.
With regard to my own state, we curiously enough have a statue of Jefferson Davis in the Capitol in Frankfort. Davis' sole connection to Kentucky was he was born there. He subsequently moved to Mississippi, and Kentucky, of course, did not secede from the Union. So I think it's appropriate, certainly in Kentucky, to be talking about the appropriateness of continuing to have Jefferson Davis's statue in a very prominent place in our state capital. Maybe a better place for that would be the Kentucky History Museum, which is also in the state capitol.
So whether you want to have Confederate figures in official government places or what have you, Patrick, I guess it's a debate worth having potentially. A lot of people worried, though, that history is about to get skewed if this goes too far and you try to scrub any mention of the Confederacy from the public square.
Yeah, although when you look at what Mitch McConnell's saying, I'm almost tempted to think he's just saying that Jefferson Davis wasn't loyal enough to Kentucky, and Mitch McConnell demands 100% loyalty. But Yeah, I mean, I think there is a real concern. I mean, you can get into this ridiculous idea of the Dukes of Hazzard stuff. I mean, like, we have to accurately portray it. There are people in our culture who think the flag is neat. Whether there's any governments who need to, you know, concerning to honor the political and military leaders, I'm pretty unsympathetic. I don't think you need the flag almost anywhere, really, outside of a museum, because we should honor the sacrifices and the suffering that went on during the Civil War, because it was a war that had to be fought, you know, sort of to resolve the contradictions at the heart of the founding. But the cause for which the Confederacy was fighting was the wrong one. And so, I think that should be sort of clear enough in the way that we do things. So, I mean, you can't have Washington and Lee University. No.
I think that's a large point. I think there's very little sympathy for the general display of the Confederate flag in most parts of the country. And there is likely to be a line drawn there. But there was a question on CNN the other day, and we don't have the audio of it, but it was between two of their anchors, Ashley Banfield and Don Lemon, where Ashley Banfield was wondering now whether we should really have a Jefferson Memorial, since he was a slaveholder, and Don Lemon, of all people, said, well, no, Jefferson was a critical figure in the history of the entire United States. He wasn't just a slaveholder, but he said, you know, if that debate needs to happen, we can have that debate down the road, but he didn't want to get into that right now. So it looks as though that there does need to be a line drawn, as you said, and it looks like, for the most part, at least right now, it seems to be drawn probably in the right place.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to recognize for someone like Jefferson, that was an ordinary thing to be a slaveholder at the time. And that's important to recognize that it was an ordinary thing for a general or an ordinary person in the South to join with the Confederacy. I mean, they're not to be condemned on a personal level, I don't think.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this is courtesy of a writer at the Huffington Post named Allie Michael. And she wrote a piece in the wake of the whole Rachel Dolezal fiasco that is entitled, I Sometimes Don't Want to Be White Either. And she says that she experienced a lot of the feelings that Dolezal had, obviously didn't try to portray herself as black. But she said, there was a time in my 20s when everything I learned about the history of racism made me hate myself, my whiteness, my ancestors, and my descendants. I remember deciding that I couldn't have biological children because I didn't want to propagate my privilege biologically. And so she goes on to talk about how being white, even with the feeling of culturelessness and responsibility for racism, is nothing compared to not being white. But being white and facing the truth of what that means historically and systemically can drive you to do the weird and unthinkable that we see in Dolezal today. It seems like a good warning. Rachel Dolezal's actions are a potential pitfall for any white people on the journey towards recognizing the truth of what it means to be white and accepting responsibility for it. But we cannot not be white. And we cannot undo what whiteness has done. We can only start from where we are and who we are. And, you know, Patrick, usually we disagree with the left when they get on tangents like this, but deeply liberal white people deciding not to have kids might not be the worst idea.
That's true. Although they do that all the time in the first place. Then you also have to agree with her reasonable statement that she cannot not be white. I'm going to have to give her credit that that's a sensible statement. The article is hilarious and true. And it's also kind of admirably juvenile. She talks about living in South Africa and how she just kind of wanted to identify with her black family and came to like despise her own sort of heritage. And it's just like, it is this trend of trying to sort of deny reality and become something you're not because of your ideological desires. And it's just completely bizarre.
So are we seeing Rachel Dolezal's the peak of this? And now with people slightly less bizarre, like Allie Michael, we're starting to come down the slope on the other side here? Or is this level of crazy going to be with us for a while?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like the left has figured this out, because there's this great with the Rachel Dolezal thing. Like, clearly, you know, fairly clearly, she just is a bit of a scam artist and now is trying to keep it going. And yet there are all these liberal intellectuals who are saying, okay, that's interesting. So you don't even know who you say you don't even know who your parents are. And so they're just playing along with it because they're so hesitant to give offense and to say, oh, well, you know, you might actually have to sort of subscribe to biological realities. I think the left is being relatively solicitous, if not completely so.
Well, we'll see who identifies as what, I'm sure, in the coming days here on some other topic. Patrick, thanks so much for filling in for Jim, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Greg.
Patrick Brennan of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Thursday. I will not be, but tune in on Thursday anyway for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.